So this presentation is really very much about community engagement. This means talking the talk and walking the walk through outreach and involvement with the people who are our closest neighbors. This is a key component in preparing the next generation of public health professionals. We have no disclosures, financial or otherwise. So through innovative education, research, and service-based collaborative programming, the Boston University School of Public Health is committed to improving universal care, particularly for disadvantaged and vulnerable populations. In the public health practice office, I wear dual hats. As a community liaison, I plan and coordinate community-related efforts with agencies that focus on public health and health disparities in neighboring underserved communities. As program manager for the New England Alliance for Public Health Workforce Development, or the Alliance, which is the HRSA-funded Public Health Training Center for New England, I manage the integration of Alliance activities with academic and practice partners. The Alliance works to increase the number of collaborative projects and field placements for the School of Public Health. Well, often vulnerable populations will benefit, and serious public health workforce shortages and learning gaps are identified and addressed through this work. The school and community-based collaborations that we have engaged in work. This is something that we know from our experiences. The BU School of Public Health Practice Office supports community engagement through collaborative programs. The BU Public Health Alliance for Minorities, or FAM, is a student organization through which a pipeline of qualified public health professionals can be developed. Partnerships with organizations such as the Sportsman's Tennis Club, a community-based nonprofit, creates opportunities that benefit both the student as they gain experience in the real world and the agency or the community that they are working for. Sportsman's Tennis Club is of Boston, or actually in Dorchester, was the first African-American owned and operated indoor nonprofit tennis club in the country. It was founded in 1961 to give urban adult tennis enthusiasts and youth an opportunity to play tennis year-round. We're talking about New England, so typically we get about 3 months a year to play tennis. The organization has a broad mission, which includes improving educational, physical, and cultural opportunities for students by addressing issues such as obesity and nutrition, violence, self-esteem, leadership, and academic achievement. Within a 1.5 mile radius of Sportsman's, over 10,000 young people attend schools which are in a range that law enforcement officials term hot spots for youth violence. Sportsman's is so much more than a tennis club to this community. For more than 50 years, it has been a safe haven for these surrounding communities. Each year, over 2,500 young people are introduced to low-cost, no-cost tennis, academic, and enrichment programs. High Energy Young Sisters, or Hey Sister, is an innovative program that was designed to help girls find strength inside themselves. The young women of FAM at Boston University are now engaged in a very successful effort to support this community partner.
Hi, I'm Anna, and I represent FAM, as seen up here. And so, just to go along with that, there we go. High Energy Young Sister, or Hey Sister, started in 2004 is a youth program for girls aged 10 to 17 that combines tennis instruction with personal development workshop. The workshops focus on health and wellness, financial literacy, leadership, social issues, organizational skills, and college readiness. Hey Sister runs for one full academic year and is currently enrolls about 30 to 50 girls, depending on the time of year. So FAM, or Public Health Alliance for Minorities, is a public health associate, or is a student-run organization through Boston University School of Public Health. FAM is committed to increasing awareness of minority issues both at Boston University and within the greater Boston area while addressing minority health disparities through outreach, service, and partnership within the school and the local community. So the partnership started in 2008, joined together to enhance the Hey Sister program through community collaborations. The purpose was to use students from Boston University School of Public Health who are engaged and passionate about health and wellness to lead a series of health-related personal development workshops. The proposed outcome was to provide girls with positive role models from diverse populations who are interested in the subject and can influence and empower young girls through education and skill building. So implementing the program. So I was a member of the 2009, I guess, chapter that went to Sportsman's Tennis Club and worked with the Hey Sister group. And so in 2009, FAM members helped develop the curriculum for a 6-series health program on topics in a range of different topics targeting information that the girls we thought could be most useful. FAM students were responsible for designing and delivering their curriculums for each session. This really allowed the FAM students to apply their knowledge of public health and make it fun and informative for girls to learn about public health and personal health. The sessions were held every Saturday morning, and the program included breakfast for the girls and the FAM students, sponsored by Boston University School of Public Health, and followed by personal development workshops, including 1-hour tennis sessions, and this was all free for the girls to attend. So these are the examples from the topics that we had selected for the girls. Obviously, H1N1 was the big topic of conversation last year, both within their schools and just within the local communities. So it was a really interesting one I helped run. And they actually knew a lot about H1N1, almost surprising. So each year, we try to tailor the different program topics according to the girls' interests and targeting areas of public health which affect them most. This year, I know that we've taken a survey, actually, to see what kind of other topics are interesting to them, because we don't really want to repeat, because a lot of the girls that we ended up getting last year are actually continuing to stay in the program again this year. So that's obviously positive for us and positive feedback, but we've actually taken our first session. We started with bullying, healthy relationships, and domestic violence. And I think given the news that you all have probably all seen, bullying is a hot topic of conversation, and obviously something that these girls, 10 to 17, are really having to deal with. So, current status, we're now in our third year of lessons with new and interesting topics, at least I think so. For our session a couple weeks ago, like I said, we covered bullying, healthy relationships, and domestic violence. The Hey Sister program continues to grow in participation, as I mentioned, with increasing number of girls every year, and then also increasing involvement from the FAM students. I know this year the amount of feedback that we've gotten, they know that we've been selected to come present, so the amount of people that we have coming to each session is drastically improved. So, go us. So, continuity and sustainability. One of the biggest problems we actually have in public health school, especially for master's degrees, just how quick students tend to turn over. So one of our biggest challenges as FAM, as a group, is just continuous recruitment and also making sure that we can promote the mission and the vision of this program to all the students to get active involvement. And so we've been fortunate enough in maintaining the program through this continuous recruitment and through the support that we've received from Boston University School of Public Health and through Sportsman Tennis Club. And moving forward, we're actually hoping to continue our involvement there by bringing in, I know for our master's degree program, we have to do practicums. So we're actually trying to create practicum opportunities for students to get more involved in the community initiatives and also understanding how your work in the classroom can also be applied to the real world, just to give them a taste of what kind of work is out there and what kind of interesting activities you can do within the community and the impacts that you can make by just talking to girls about things that they're interested in, that you're interested in helping them learn. So that brings us to our final slide, which is impacts. So as I've mentioned, overall, FAM's time working with the Hay Sister program has proven to be beneficial for both the girls of Hay Sister and as well as the FAM public health students. As you can see, through the program, we've been able to provide positive role models for the young ladies, as well as enhancing their knowledge of not only public health, but personal health as well. For FAM students, they get to gain, they get to apply their graduate education to the local community, emphasizing the importance of community health initiatives to the role of public health, and providing student access and understanding of the community and its unserved needs, and also gaining exposure and leadership roles that can have lasting impacts into the future. So, I think, thank you.
So I just wonder, are any of the presenters from the final paper assessing a novel mobile mammography intervention in this room? No? Okay. So I'll open up the floor to questions. Any questions for our presenters? Please stand up so we can
hear.
Sure. Thanks.
Scott Harris. And I was just wondering, so the 6-week program that you have, is it 6-week continuous, or you spread that over the course of an entire academic year?
So for right now, as I mentioned in one of the earlier slides, the Hay Sister program actually covers a lot of different topics, and where our public health school intersects is that we do the health and wellness section of the personal development workshops. So that section actually, as of now, just falls in the fall. So last year's 6 series was just throughout the fall, and it ended around Christmas time with a Christmas party. But
so it's 6 continual weeks.
So for the most part, 6 continuous weeks. Obviously with Thanksgiving, holidays, there's breaks. But this year, again, we've already started up going until Christmas time.
Yes.
This is about the breastfeeding education. And I've been working with the new program agencies in the United States and in another project, preconception healthcare. But one of the nurses working there, she told me about the fact that the new program was kind of being called attention because they provided formula
right
to mothers. So I was wondering, you know, when you look at that population, women that are part of the new program, maybe it is a convenient sample, but they have been in the program for a long time, they're kind of more biased to the use of formula because that's the vouchers they receive. So I don't know if
The majority of women who are eligible for WIC do use it, whether they, you know, whether they're formula users or not. Although, I mean, certainly there is. I actually did a presentation a couple of years ago on the economic incentives of the formula provision program. One of the things that WIC has done to address that recently is to up the value of the food package for breastfeeding mothers. So that it used to be that they got tuna, and this was true when we were doing this research, that they got tuna and carrots as extra food, and now they get a higher fruit and vegetable voucher, they get more food, they also get, women love the jars of baby food, and WIC has tried for years to get women just to make their mothers to make their own baby food, but they won't do it. So now they give out jarred baby food, and if you breastfeed, you get much more jarred baby food, and you get meat jarred baby food, which you don't get otherwise. And we actually had mothers coming back to the office with cases of formula saying, actually, I'm breastfeeding.
Okay, but you still provide formula, supported?
Yeah, the idea behind the foundation of the WIC program, which David Page, who was one of the co-authors on the paper, was the person who piloted the program that became WIC. And there used to be really high incidence of anemia in infants, and this was in Baltimore City, you know, which caused long-term learning disabilities and, you know, impaired cognitive function. And also there was a fairly high incidence of rickets going on. And so back at the time that this was going on in the late 60s and early 70s, there was so little breastfeeding, and I think the medical community didn't really understand breastfeeding's importance. And so the idea was to provide women with formula so that they would stop feeding the baby cow's milk or pet milk. And so that's how it got started. It wasn't until the 90s that we really kind of got it together and said, wow, we really need to promote breastfeeding. On the other hand, you know, if women aren't going to breastfeed, and we see all these barriers that have nothing to do with WIC, you know, between the obstetrical practice, the birth experience they're having, what happens in the hospital, what happens with the pediatrician, you know, and they can't, and formula is really expensive, you know, if you're not providing it, is that at the expense of the infant? And, you know, I think it's really hard to strike a balance between, you know, what's the best public health initiative. And I think trying to force mothers into breastfeeding is really not a great idea. And so I think what we really need to focus on is the structural change. And then once we have all of our ducks lined up in a row and say women really have full support for breastfeeding, you can kind of lean on their agency a little bit more. But right now, leaning on their agency is just a self-blaming, you know, it's a blaming technique. And they do it themselves already. I couldn't do it, you know, it hurt you too much, you know, I was too tired, I didn't make enough milk. They never say, well, you know, the nurse at the hospital told me to start supplementing, and so I was, you know, then that made me all nervous, and then I wasn't feeding my baby often enough, and so therefore, you know, they don't identify that as a cause. It's all about themselves. It's really, you know, it's a real dilemma.
Yes. Did you have a question? Jess?
For the Hay Sister program, I was just curious, during the, where you talk about what public health is, with any of the girls in the program, do you talk about public health as a career path? Does that ever?
Absolutely. And that's, I guess, part of one of the other reasons that we bring in public health students, because the girls, like I said, 10 to 17, so public health students, especially in the master's degree, maybe like 22 to 26, 27. So a younger age group, but then also talking to them about kind of just as a positive role model, showing them what you do in the career. Every time we introduce ourselves with what our concentration is at public health school, what we would like to do with our future, as a way to kind of engage them in what is public health, and then also showing them, you know, this is what you can do with a public health career. So I think, I mean, they definitely have questions too about what we do necessarily. And we try to tie it in with the lessons as well. So like I said, we talked about bullying. So we kind of talked about social and behavioral science, you know, and how that can be used to target, I mean, social marketing, all that kind of stuff. So definitely something that we try to promote.
Yes.
Back to the breastfeeding, considering all the data that you have regarding providers not, you know, obstetricians and pediatricians not really,
right,
linking the breastfeeding with health with the mother, is there any outreach being done to those providers as far as getting them to work with WIC or, you know,
right,
promote breastfeeding more?
There is some connection that WIC has made. What the next stage in our research, actually, because this research was not initially about obstetricians and pediatricians. We did ask, did anybody talk to you, you know, prenatally? How did your birth go? You know, what happened at the hospital? I mean, we were asking some questions, and we just wound up finding out how we were shocked at the lack of support. And it was actually really hard sometimes doing the analysis on this. It's just like, you know, when somebody, like a woman comes into the pediatrician and she said, and the pediatrician starts saying, okay, well, they should be having this many ounces of formula, you know, and this should be happening, that should be happening. She says, oh, well, I'm breastfeeding. And the pediatrician says, oh, well, that's okay. you know, and it's, you know, here you have this woman who says, you know, basically, I don't know anybody who's breastfed. I've gone against everybody in my community, blah, 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 blah. And she goes to this one person who could potentially really give her some backup. So our next project is actually to really start looking at the pediatricians who are
not only being used by people who are in the WIC program, but pediatricians sort of in general, and to do some analysis of some the class difference in what's occurring? Because I know that like the pediatrician that I take my children to, we didn't use her when they were infants because we lived somewhere else, but I know she's very supportive of breastfeeding. There's no formula advertising in her waiting room, and she meets with women individually, and she'll have them come in every day, you know, if they need to at the beginning and stuff like that. I don't think these moms are getting that kind of support. We only had two moms whose pediatrician really kind of sat down with them and like suggested a follow-up visit and stuff like that. 2 out of 75. You know, it was really sad. So yes, I mean, I do think WIC needs to develop better partnerships, but I think we have to have a better idea of what's going on and where there is good practice going, and whether or not we can develop some mentoring there, or whether or not we can start sending WIC mothers to these pediatricians, like whether or not they can use their insurance there, so on and so forth.
Somebody had a question in the back. Yes.
I'm actually interested in the low baby program. Yeah. How are you partners? How are you doing the education in that community regarding cervical screening?
The partners are a group of community-based organizations. There's two main ones that started 5 years ago now with my mentor going out there and you know saying there's this disparity here. Do you guys know about this? How can we help you? How can we work together to build a partnership? So there's one partnership, one member called Sant Law. That's the main group that we work with over there. And as far as the education and outreach goes, we now have a Center for Haitian Studies that is a clinic-based operation in Little Haiti where free care is provided and education is disseminated that way as well. But the goal, a lot of it, is to get the, you know, it's a CBPR process. And so having the community members involved in that, teaching us the best way to get to people and to reach individuals is key. And so what we found, you know, is there are using churches, other groups like that really gets the community members is necessary if you want to try to have any kind of intervention at all. So it starts that way, but then the word, you know, gets spread individually based on community preference. And we also have what are termed community health workers, basically, who are women of Haitian women who understand the cultural issues and you know, can identify with others. And they primarily provide the education for screenings and things of that sort.
Any other questions? Yes.
I was wondering in your study, I used to work for an agency and we went to, I mean, I didn't go personally, but many of my colleagues went to IT, and then put on Child Health Program. Mm-hmm. And at that point, more than 10 years ago, they thought the indicators in Haiti were really very, very, very bad.
Right.
So I guess that population is coming from a background where health care, prevention, and promotion is not there.
It doesn't, they have no knowledge.
No. They're terrible. And I was wondering about the fact that there is such an increased incidence in cervical cancer has also to do a lot with HIV status and AIDS, which is
right.
To that.
That analysis, we have looked at HIV status in conjunction with those, I believe. I'm not familiar right at this moment with our data on that. I apologize, but I can definitely look that up for you. But you're completely correct. I mean, there's no access in Haiti to these services. And one of our other projects is actually in Haiti. We're in rural villages in Timon outside of Port-au-Prince where we are doing the self-sampling procedure, basically, that we have developed and evaluating that and the acceptability of self-sampling for screening and vaccine efficacy, too, or if women are willing to be vaccinated down there as well.
I think that's great because, you know, Haiti and Brazil, usually Haiti have the highest prevalence of HIVs
right.
From that whole area of Americas and the Caribbean.
Yeah, we're still going through that. That data was just finished being collected. We had 500 individuals that were enrolled in a study down there that finished just prior to the earthquake. It was kind of disrupted by all of that, obviously. And so the project was still ongoing with partners in health down there and other NGOs we were working with. And so we have some of that data. We're still waiting on, you know, we're looking at the distribution of genotypes of HPV infection down there. And we're still analyzing some of that. So it's a large scale kind of, you know, goal of reducing this disparity and tackling it from a variety of different perspectives. So that's what we're trying to do.
Anything else? Well, thank you very much. Have a good rest of the conference.